Question number 30,001, Mr. Peter S. Real 16. Now, how long did this period of, well, almost slaughter for the Trials of Germans and Italians are concerned, how long did it go on for?
Four days. We went out on the 13th. And we returned on the 16th. So we had 13, 14, 15, 16. 4 days.
And with no air cover for the Germans at all?
Oh, yes, we did meet some aircraft eventually, because they wondered where the hell we were coming from. And they sent out... because when we used to fly out there, we didn't give them any radar. They may have had a chance, because we were literally, you know, about the height of this cottage, above the ground, all 24 of us, two squadrons. And we destroyed God knows how many lorries. And then there was an airfield on the road between Agela, and there was Junkers 52 on the ground there, and I destroyed that. And we used to, on this airfield, the chaps used to make an overnight stop there. And so in the next morning early, they were around their mobile canteen trying to get some breakfast. But what we did, we took off in the dark, despite the fact that we had no aids whatsoever, no ground landed lights or landing aids. And we just took off and... We flew in the dark, so we got to the road just as dawn was breaking. We got to this airfield, and these chaps all crowded round us, and we strafed that airfield with all the... God knows how many men we killed there. I can't tell you. I got one Junkers 52 destroyed on the ground. And then I got one six-ton lorry destroyed. Many men killed on the parade area. But we lost a sergeant. He was shot down by flak. He was called Sergeant Caldwell. Became a prisoner of war.
So this is a really successful period, as far as you're concerned.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was... it got into the newspapers here. Germany behind the enemy lines.
So it was actually behind the enemy lines?
Oh, for... Yes, yes. About 300 or 400 miles.
And this was, it had a number, this was LG-125.
Yeah, that's right, LG-125.
You were very isolated there. I mean...
Yeah, absolutely isolated.
So what happens next then? I mean, were you found by the Germans? I mean,
yes, they eventually... discovered where we were and where we were coming from, and they then decided to send some reconnaissance aircraft out to try and sort us out. And we realised this, and we decided it was time to make a move. But we'd done a colossal amount of damage in the 4 days that we were there. We came back on the fourth day.
So, very successful.
It was, yes.
Now, you then seem to go on 17th November, go to El Adem. That's the old Tobruk airfield, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, we moved up. Just a minute. Where
17th.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, we returned to our own landing ground on the 16th. We did a morning job on the 16th. We strafed the road, and I got Junkers 88, and he also a small amount of flak encountered. I got a petrol bowser destroyed, a six-ton lorry destroyed, and three-ton lorries damaged. So that later that day we came back. We returned to our own landing ground in the desert, which was about 300 or 400 miles away. Then the next day, we moved to El Adam.
Now, what state was El Adam in? Because it had been, you know, it had been a German airfield, and it had fought over a lot.
Oh, there was a lot of wrecked aircraft about on the airfield, Italians and all sorts of things. I've got a photograph album upstairs where it shows you them all.
I mean, did you take an interest in these aircraft? I suppose you could go and look at them.
Oh, go and look at them, yes, but they were wrecks.
Not an awful lot left then.
No.
So what were you doing there at El Adam?
Well, we were assembling there to continue doing the same sort of thing which we'd been doing on that forward move. Because Al Adam was quite a way forward from where we were. then our army was moving up. They were moving up fast, and their recent flyers were getting very short. So I've got a job here on the 20th of November. We escorted some Lodestars, which carrying to a place called Masseuse, where the army were based, and they got the airfield there, and these Lodestars were delivering petrol for the army.
So all round supplies were getting short.
Oh yes, because our chaps were going so fast that the resuppliers couldn't keep up with them, so they sent them in by air as far as they could, or as much as they could.
Anything else at the time?
That was on the 20th of November. We escorted Lodestars. And the next day, I didn't do much. I did a cannon test. I don't know why I had to do a cannon test, but I did. And then the next day, no, next day but one, 23rd, we did this beer trip to Aboukir from El Adam. So that took us two and a quarter hours. To get to Aboukir from, it's just to pick up the beer.
this is from Aboukir this time.
From El Adam to Aboukir. Aboukir was near Alexandria. There was two and a quarter hours. So it's about 500 or 600 miles away.
That's quite a lot for a few beers.
It is, but I've got here beer trip for CO's farewell to Roy Marples was due to be posted. Then we were going to have a beer trip for his, say, farewell to him.
Do you remember his party? I mean, was it, I don't know whether it was a big party.
We had quite a few beers. But coming back from there, it took us 2 hours and 20 minutes. We had, our last 20 minutes was at night. Landed at night. Anyway, we had quite a good do. And all Roy Marples signed my logbook here.
So that was him gone.
That was, well, not quite. Then he went about afterwards. 2 days. We did the beer trip on the 23rd, so I suppose we had probably had the party on the 24th as we got back at night. We may have had a few that night, I can't remember.
There's also a story of a trip to Tobruk. Do you remember that?
Yes.
That sounds quite unusual, though.
Yes, we moved up...
That at all?
I was trying to think.
It was with Roy Marples.
Yes, I remember it well.
Yeah. Seems to have gone to a harbour bar.
So it was with Roy Marples. It must have been here. It must have been.
It must have been around about that time because El Adam is to Brooks.
Yes.
Airfield.
You see, we attempted to land. Must have been about the 24th because I haven't got an entry on the 24th. And we did that trip to Aboukir on the 23rd. Just a minute. Let's
So what do you remember of this trip to the bar? And you don't need, I mean, it won't be in your logbook, a trip to a bar, so it shouldn't be. Well, what do you remember?
Well, I did have a beer trip.
No, but to the to Brook.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find out when that was.
Well, it would be in this period when you were at El Adam. That is to Brook.
Well, we were at El Adam. It's funny that. Oh, yes, here we are, El Adam. Here we are. Squadron move. On the 17th of November, because Roy didn't leave us until about the 24th, about a week later. Yeah. Squadron move, LG-101 to El Adam. And I didn't fly again. This is the 17th. Didn't fly again until the 20th, when we escorted the Lodestars to Masseuse.
We've done this.
So
yeah.
It was sometime around about the 18th of November. We were at El Adam, and which was right on top of Tobruk, you see, on top of the hill. And we decided to go down and have a look at Tobruk, because the army had bypassed it. They didn't want to hang around in Tobruk. They wanted to go forward. So we drove down to the harbour, and we drove around, and we saw this sort of bar place, and quite a largish area. And there was a massive vat of wine. It was about 6 feet in diameter, this huge, and it was obviously Italian wine. And have I said what it is there?
It says Chianti, but I think
Chianti, that was it, Chianti. And so we, there were four of us. Two from number 213 squadron, one was Chaplain Neil Campbell, and he later became chief of the air staff, became an air chief marshal. But he was flight lieutenant then, and we drove around. We thought, let's go and have a look at this wine. So we just sort of, there was a tap at the bottom, and we hadn't got any mugs or anything to drink out of. So we just tasted a while. So what we did, we took it in turns to lay down under the tap on the ground, and someone else would turn the tap on, you see. Keep your mouth open. That's right. They turn it off. You get that lot. They turn it on again and get another mouth. We all had a go at that.
Anything else about that trip? So there's no one there. It's just empty.
No one at all.
They're all free.
And no troops or anything there. It was a desolate place. The Italians had been there.
Now, right about this time, then you carry on moving forward. 26th of November, you go to Martuba, near Derna.
Yes. Yes, that's right. 26th, and we moved from El Adam. We weren't at El Adam long. We went to El Adam on the 17th of November, and then on the 26th we moved out to Martuba.
Which now, what did you think of your new squadron leader? That squadron leader,
Cochrane.
Homer Cochrane.
He was a Canadian. Funny chap. I got on all right with him, but not. I didn't have the same relationships I did with Roy Marples.
Was he a good squadron leader, you know, in the sense of how he looked after the men tactically, the rest of it?
I don't think he was very good.
What was wrong with him, do you think?
He wasn't a natural leader. And
now, what do you mean by that?
He never got, like Roy Marples, for instance. Myself, we were of a similar type, and he'd go and talk to the chaps, and he'd have a joke with them, and get to know everyone well. I knew all the chaps in my flight, in fact, in the squadron, very well. This chap, he was a bit aloof, and didn't create a very good atmosphere.
Did it affect morale?
I mean, it did a little bit. I don't, don't think. No, when we were in the air, we were all right. But and he didn't do a great deal of flying. And I don't know. I don't think he was the right chap for that job.
That's right. Remember about this time you have an ingrown toenail that gets sent off for an operation.
Oh, yes.
It's a bit of a silly thing, really. But
yes,
really,
yes.
It can hurt.
Yeah, I had to go to Benghazi. Yeah.
So did that stop you flying for a while? Or?
No. I flew up there in a hurricane, left my hurricane at their airfield there, and I managed, they had this army hospital in Benghazi, and I managed to go in there, and I had the operation that night. I arrived there about midday. I got the operation in the afternoon, and I had bandages all around my toes. I had my flying boots, so I managed to get my flying boots, and I flew back the next day. It'll be in here somewhere, I expect.
Now, the next thing is on the 18th of December, you start ferrying Hurricanes with long-range tanks from Benin to Algeria.
Oh, yes, yes.
Tell me about this. I don't understand this operation. What were you exactly doing? Why were they going there?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. You know, the invasion of Algeria took place in November, mid to late November. And all the invasion force came from the UK. All the boats with the troops on board, and they had Spitfires. And they were sent to Gibraltar in crates, and they were uncrated and reassembled, and they were all test flown, and eventually they got these aircraft, and they sent the pilots there from, I think they had two or three squadrons, I can't remember exactly. In fact, I didn't fully know, but anyway, they had two or three squadrons of Spitfires. And after the invasion, they found some airfields for them to land at, so they did. And they hadn't been there two or three weeks, I suppose, with it operating there, which is going reasonably well, I believe, although it was a long way from us. And they had torrential rain. And all these grass airfields that Spitfires were operating from were totally waterlogged. And it was just quagmire. They couldn't operate the Spitfires from them. And the authorities, you know, the RAF chiefs, they said, gosh, we must have some fighter aircraft here. We can't operate the army without fighter support. And they said, there's only one thing. We must get some Hurricanes, which will be able to operate in these bad conditions. And they decided that if they got them from the UK, and they got them all crated up, and then shipped to Gibraltar, uncrated, reassembled, test flown, what have you, they said that by the time that's all done, the war would be over. And between themselves, they decided the best way to get reinforcement fighters was from the Desert Air Force, because we had quite a few, and we had a good aircraft, the Mark IIb, and I was selected to lead these 12 Hurricanes from outside the desert side across to Algeria. Now, even with long-range tanks, we hadn't got the range to go direct. So what we had to do was to go through Malta. So we went from Benghazi to Malta and refueled there. That took from Benina, was the airfield at Benghazi, to Malta, was 2.5 hours. Now, we had to go right very low on the water, or above, just above the water, because we didn't want to get involved in any being picked up by any radar. But there was us, we were spread out. I said to Chet, spread out. You know, we've got 2.5 hours or thereabouts. so we wanted to relax a bit. And as we were about halfway across the Mediterranean going towards Malta, we saw a whole lot of aircraft, and they were Junkers 52s, escorted by Messerschmitt 110s, going in the opposite direction, going due south. We could see them over there. We couldn't attack them because we would never have got to Malta otherwise, and they were needed these aircraft urgently in Algeria. The same thing, these Messerschmitt 110s, they couldn't attack us because they were escorting their resupply aircraft, these Junkers 52s taking resupplies to the Germans. So it was quite amusing, really. Anyway, we landed at an airfield in Malta called Takali. And it was all right, we got all the aircraft down safely. And the thing was, we were going to refuel and go off the next day, so have the night there. And we stayed at an RAF rest house, or guest house, call it what you will, and it was run by a brother of a famous film star. I don't think of his name in a minute. Anyway, he was running this, and we all piled in there, slept the night. And then the next day we went, the weather clamped. It didn't happen very often in Malta, but the visibility came right down. It was raining like hell, and there was no way in which we could get off. So we went down to the airfield and hung around, and it was just impossible to go. So, and then we thought, oh, we'll be all right the next day. Strange as it may seem, the next day was just the same. So we left Benina, which was Benghazi, on the 19th of December. And we got stuck there for a week. And it wasn't until the 26th of November, Boxing Day, that we were able to get off. And we hung around, and the CN, the Air Officer Commanding Malta's well-known chap in the Battle of Britain.
Keith Park,
that's it. Yeah. He came up to me and he said, we've got to get these aircraft off. I said, we will go just as soon as we have the faintest chance of an improvement in the weather. He said, yes, he said, I know you well, I know you'll do that, but I just sort of had to mention it. I said, well, we'll be off. Well, we had our Christmas lunch in the officer's mess at Malta.
So you were there for 4 or 5 days, well, nearly a week.
We were there a week. We arrived on the 19th and we left on the 26th. And our Christmas dinner was a bit of bully beef and a couple of hardtack biscuits, because there was a shortage of food in Malta at that time, and all supplies were going in by submarine at night. In the earlier days, they tried to reinforce with convoys, and of course the Germans destroyed them all, so they had to stop daytime resupplies and go in by submarine at night. That's why there's a bit of a shortage of fuel and food.
They had more trouble when you did eventually get off, didn't you?
Well, yes, we ran into terrible weather. That trip from Takali in Malta, I went to a place called Tabessa. 3 1/4 hours we were airborne. And we had to cross the Tunisian coast between Sousse and Sfax, which is down that strip which runs down north-south. And I decided that we would go Noordfiet. So when we took off from Malta, we went 50 miles due south. And then we turned due west, still on, just above the water. The reason being that there were two islands. There was Lampedusa and another one.
Pantelleria.
Pantelleria, that was it. they were loaded with 190s and 109s. And if they'd picked us up on the radar, we would have been easy meat for them. So we crossed the coast, we literally just crossed the beach, and then we had to pull up to get over the cliffs, and then we're climbing up, and then we went 2,000 or 3,000 feet, we got into cloud, and the weather clamped. So I said, right, get in tight, we're going to close formation, go through this cloud. And we carried on. We didn't get above the cloud until we got to about 12,000 feet. And we had no radio waves, nothing. And I couldn't see the ground. So I had to do on a time base. And we had to be above 8,000 feet to get over the mountains there.
The Atlas Mountains.
That's it. Yeah. And so after a bit, I thought, well, I reckon we must be clear of those mountains now. So I said, I'm tucking tight, chaps. I'm going to start to gradually lose height and see if we can find somewhere which we can identify, pick up our position. But when we broke cloud at about 2,000 feet, I was nowhere. I couldn't see anything. So I said, right, we'll throttle back, save fuel, and we went on in a westerly direction. And I said, well, I've no idea, I've got a rough idea where we are, but I've no idea if there are any airfields around here. So I said, what we must do is to keep our eyes open and see if we can see an airfield, and when we do, we'll go in there. Well, we were going slowly across, and comparatively slowly, and I saw a lot of big vehicles, obviously a big American diggers and God knows what they were, and they were obviously building an airfield for the Americans, and they'd got one grass runway sorted out a bit, but with all this torrential rain they'd had, of course it was an absolute quagmire. So I said, well, I think we've got to go in there come what may, because we were airborne 3.25 hours anyway, so we hadn't got much fuel left. So I said, right, I'll go in first. And the mud was so thick, it just pulled you up in no time at all. So I had to then use my throttle to get off, and I put the aircraft up on its nose slightly, and couldn't move then. So, but I had left the way clear for the other chaps to come in behind me. And we all got down all right. And then we got stuck there. And we were there for, well, it must be nearly a week. Let's have a look.
That's Tabessa. That's in Algeria, isn't it?
Yes. Tabessa. It was on the 27th when we. Just the next day, a Hudson came to pick us up from Tabessa.
On the 27th?
Yeah, on the 27th.
So the flight, you flew from Malta on the 26th?
Yes. And on the 27th, Hudson came to pick us up and take us to Constantine in Algeria. And we were there until the 1st of January, when we flew back in this Hudson back to Benin, to Benghazi. And that took 7 hours and 10 minutes.
What did it come from then, the Hudson? What did it like?
Oh, no, it wasn't a passenger aircraft. It was all right.